Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. Today on Election Day, we're taking a breather from election year politics. Hope you don't mind, to talk about an ethics issue that is coming our way. There are about 116,000 people waiting for organ transplants in the U.S., and some see the prison population as part of the solution. State lawmakers are considering a bill that would require state prisons to ask inmates if they'd like to sign up as organ donors. But some worry about coercion and health risks in that pool. And today on the program, we're exploring the ethics, the policy, and the practice of organ donation when it comes to Utah's prisoners. Joining me in studio is Tenille Brown. She is an associate professor of law at the S.J. Quinney College of Law at the University of Utah. She was a postdoctoral scholar at the Center for Biomedical Ethics at Stanford University. She's also been a fellow with the MacArthur Foundation's Law and Neuroscience Project. And Professor Brown, it's great to see you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Jim Tabery. He is an assistant professor of philosophy and a member of the Division of Medical Ethics and Humanities at the University of Utah. He researches and teaches courses that examine the intersection between science and society, such as medical ethics, research ethics, and science in the law. And Professor Tabery, welcome to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Good to be here.
Also with us, Steve Gerke. He's a spokesman for the Utah Department of Corrections. Steve, great to have you here as well.
Thanks for having me.
Later on in the program, we turn to environmentalism, a growing environmental vision in Mormon country. But first, organ donation and prisoners. Do you think asking prisoners if they want to donate their organs is a good idea? What concerns or safeguards do you think should be included in legislation? Join our conversation. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Steve Gerke, I want to start with you. Maybe you can get us up to speed on what current practice is here in Utah. I understand that Utah prisons already ask inmates if they want to donate their organs, and that this law that's being proposed would just codify that policy.
That's pretty much true, yes. What we do in Utah at the state prison is basically when inmates are processed into the prison system, and this is a new practice, I should clarify, that we've put into place within the past year. When they come into prison, they're basically given this assessment. You know, we find out what their underlying needs are, and as part of the assessment packet and introducing them into the prison system, we'll give them a flyer that basically says, you know, you have the ability to give your organs in case of death, and they either sign yes or no that they do or don't want to elect to do that. So essentially, it's only an end-of-life type situation. We only allow that to happen when inmates are on death's bed, basically, for lack of a better term. So they're in the hospital at that point. They're, you know, receiving medical care. They may be on life support. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to have that conversation with their family regardless. And they're going to say, you know, is this something you want to do or not? They'll say yes or no. In the event they say yes and they do want to give their organs in the event of their death, there's still a lot of processes that have taken into effect. The doctors have to, you know, declare them able and willing, an able-bodied person to donate their organ. A lot of times there's things in the prison system that prevent that from happening, such as hepatitis, HIV, things like that. So that's basically the current process. That form that we give them comes into play now in essence when there's no next of kin available at the time of death, or if the next of kin haven't had those discussions with the inmate, they don't know what the inmate's desire is, then we have that form. We have something that's signed by the inmate that says, you know, this was my desire, this is my wish, before we even proceed to the step of, you know, whether they're even eligible to do that.
You mentioned this is a relatively new policy. Why? Why put this policy in place?
It was after we had conversations with Representative Eliason, who's the one who's floating this bill. You know, he said, is this something that's, you know, that we're able to do, that you guys currently do? And it was something, well, you know, while inmates do have the ability, there's nothing that's formal. There's nothing in place or in practice right now that really formalizes, you know, this process, gives inmates the information, basically. So that was part of the intent, was basically to say, here, you have the ability to do this, just like you or I might elect to do that on a driver's license form. You know, it basically allows them to have that information in front of them.
So you've been doing this for about a year?
That's correct, about a year.
Mm-hmm. How many inmates have voluntarily signed up to do this?
It's a good question. I don't have that number in front of me. But again, regardless of whether they want to or not, there still comes that later question as to whether they're even able to do it, whether the doctors and medical professionals would even take their organs at that point. You know, if we go in to give blood, you know, for example, there's a question on the form, have you been in a detention or jail facility within the past 72 hours? And that's one of the reasons for deferral or something that would preclude you from doing that. So a lot of times that comes into play too. So it's not even so much a question of whether the inmate's willing to do it. It's a question of whether the doctors would be even willing to take the organs at that point in time. But again, I don't really have the information in terms of how many people have signed up for it at this point. Mm.
Speaking with Steve Gerke, he is spokesman for the Utah Department of Corrections, talking about a proposal to codify, to make a law that would essentially give inmates the choice, invite them to be organ donors. And if this is a good idea, 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. We'll certainly get into many specifics as we go, but just generally, why is this a controversy? It seems like a way that prisoners could right a wrong that they committed against society. They're asked to fill out a form just like the rest of us when we register our driver's licenses. Professor Tabery, why is this controversial?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, the argument for it is there are hundreds of thousands of people across the country waiting for organs, and anything that can be done to add to that scarce resource is a plus. The arguments against it usually take one form or another of slippery slope. So basically what's being proposed in the Utah bill isn't all that controversial. There's concerns about can prisoners actually freely choose something, or are there risks of coercion? If we started taking the organs not just from prisoners who die of a natural death but die via capital punishment, then that raises a host of issues about would jurors start taking into consideration the organs of that person on trial, you know, when they're deciding whether or not to list life in prison or the death penalty? Would prisoners be coerced into choosing more organ donation friendly methods of execution? So I think, you know, I mean, just as, you know, a recent event right around the same time that this bill was being proposed in Utah, China just recently announced that it's going to be phasing out its use of organs from prisoners. And so I think that's, you know, I don't think we necessarily need to worry about running into the same situation that they ran into there, but it's telling that other places that have tried this have been unhappy with the result.
Professor Brown, what is the law when it comes to allowing inmates to sign up as organ donors? Is this proposed Utah law a trendsetter, or are we kind of following the pack?
So there are other states that have done something like what Utah has proposed to do. There are actually even other states, maybe a handful, four or five, that will allow the parole board to revisit the sentence of the prisoner if they volunteer to donate their organs once they die, which is something that's not being considered here in Utah. I would say that's a little more aggressive. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't think that this is not something that would be illegal. There would need to be certain procedural safeguards in place to make sure that the due process rights of the prisoner they're protected. And we have a lot of those that are already in place to make sure that we don't follow the same path that was pursued in China. The use of organs for prisoners once they're executed, and then creating this like on-demand source of organs. We already have constitutional protections for prisoners that would make that impossible. We have federal laws that prohibit the sale or transfer of organs, and so we're not talking about that here either. We're just talking about the donation after death, giving prisoners the same rights that the rest of us have who are not in prison to elect to make that donation once we die. So it's not illegal. There is just this kind of background ethical concern that prisoners, as Professor Tabery said, don't have the same capacity to consent out of concerns of coercion or even just secondary gain, that they might think, if I volunteer to donate my organs once I die, maybe that will look really good with the parole board, and when I come up for parole, they'll see that. And in the same way that they may reduce my sentence for good behavior or time served, they might also say, look, he's willing to donate his organ. I'm not sure that's necessarily something that's a bad thing, but that's not what's proposed here. So we could just make sure that the paperwork is in separate places. As Mr. Gerke mentioned, the timing is critical to make sure that they're making this decision when they enter. They're not being asked when they're up before the parole board. These documents could be kept in separate places. I think there are a lot of things we could do under the current legal umbrella to make sure that we get as many organs as we can from as many donors as we can.
Sounds like you like this idea.
I do, actually. So I've read the bill. I think the bill needs some more teeth to make sure that it's more protective of the prisoners' rights. The only thing that really gets at the voluntariness of the bill is that it says prisoners can choose to donate. I would like to see more education to the prisoners to let them know that they aren't going to get any benefits out of this in their prison sentence, and that they're not going to, that they may not have the direct kind of benefit that they think they might be getting. And I would like to just make sure they're aware of what the risks are, if to maybe to their family or to for burial if they have particular religious beliefs, although very few religions prohibit cadaveric donation. But I would just want to make sure that the prisoners have more information about what it is that they're signing up for, maybe even more than we would require for the rest of the population, because they are in this captive space and maybe thinking that they could get some extra benefit out of this. But otherwise, no, I don't have a problem with prisoners being given the same rights to make decisions as the rest of us are given.
Steve Gerke, explain a little bit in more detail exactly what prisoners are, how they are informed. What is the wording of the flyer? Is it at intake? At what point in their incarceration does this occur?
Sure, it is at intake. We did circulate those forms to people who are already incarcerated, so we applied it retroactively. But generally, it's going to occur at intake.
What does that wording say?
The wording basically says this is an option for you. Anyone has the ability to elect to either be an organ donor or not. What would you like to do? There's also a third box on there, so you can say yes, you can say no. And there's a third box that basically says I'm already an organ donor. So it kind of negates the need for that form in the first place. But yeah, it's a very basic form. I mean, it does kind of inform them, look, if you haven't already made this decision clear to your loved ones or clear to anyone, this is an option. This is a point in time where you can go ahead and do so. There are great points being made. I mean, we do go out of our way, whether it's someone who's potentially going to be involved in a media story, for example, when the news comes in. We make it clear to them at that point, look, you're not going to gain anything from this. We're not going to consider an early parole date for you or anything because of your involvement in the story. It doesn't benefit us in any way. It's just simply a question, do you want to do it, yes or no? So we do go out of our way to try and be clear for issues like that, and it's a great point. I mean, it's something where you have a captive audience, you have people in custody, and you don't want to give them any kind of misperceptions or false images that they're going to be released early because they're cooperating with custody. So that is something we have to be careful of. The other point that was brought up again is it's an issue of if is this going to push people to be put to death in a more convenient manner for the person who's potentially going to receive the organ? Is it going to increase our capital punishment rate? And it's a great question. I mean, people who are dying by lethal injection, I mean, that's potentially poisoning the organs anyway, and they're not going to be potential donors. And that's the process that's put into place in most states. Utah, of course, is kind of falls out as an outlier, where we have a different process that we have as a backup that's still on the books from 2004 in terms of the shooting. So again, that's something that's potential, I guess, is that could come into play in the debates and the process that go into this. Right now, again, Utah is just simply in the business of once someone's on deathbed, just like you or I, they can elect to do that. And if the processes apply and the medical professionals say, yeah, that you're an eligible donor, then we're going to consider in that case. So that's just currently where we stand, but great points being made, of course.
Professor Tabery, from what you've heard, is this enough informed consent on the part of the prison system? Are they giving the prisoners clear instructions on exactly what they're doing when they agree to donate an organ?
Yeah, it sounds to me like everything that Mr. Gerke's saying is on the up and up. I think the point that Professor Brown was making a little earlier, though, is worth emphasizing, which is what Mr. Gerke's emphasizing isn't written into the bill. The bill just basically says they can voluntarily donate posthumously. It doesn't say, are we talking just prisoners who die of natural deaths, or are we talking about prisoners who are executed? It doesn't say what the nature of the consent is. And so I think the bill proposers and the folks who are voting on it would do themselves a favor by trying to beef it up a little bit to say explicitly how this process works so that there aren't these concerns about coercion.
Speaking with Jim Tabery, he's an assistant professor of philosophy at the University of Utah. Also with us, Tennille Brown, an assistant professor of law at the University of Utah, and Steve Gerke, spokesman for the Utah Department of Corrections. And we're talking about prisoners as organ donors and a proposal to require state prisons to give inmates the opportunity to sign up as donors. If you'd like to join our conversation with questions or comments about the measure, the ethics, or the practice, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Today on the program, we're talking about this idea to require prisons to ask inmates if they want to sign up as organ donors. Supporters say they just want to give inmates the option. Others worry about public health risks and ethical concerns. And joining us this hour in studio, Tenille Brown. She's an associate professor of law at the University of Utah. Jim Tabery, an assistant professor of philosophy, also at the U. And Steve Gerke, spokesman for the Utah Department of Corrections. And if you'd like to join our conversation, 801-355-TALK is our number. What's your take on allowing prisoners to donate organs? Would you want to know if your transplanted organ came from an inmate? 801-355-TALK. 801-355-8255. I guess we were talking during the break, the history of research when it comes to prisoners is not a pretty one. And that is probably why some of the concerns have been cropping up. Tenille Brown?
Yeah, I think it definitely colors the analysis here. We have a history of performing very risky lobotomies on prisoners, of different forms of civil commitment, even the solitary confinement that is not considered acceptable by the psychiatric professional associations. We tested infections on prisoners. We've done all sorts of very unethical research on that population. And I think part of that history really colors our thinking about this population generally. For research purposes, they're considered a vulnerable population now, as with homeless, children, pregnant women, where they have to be given extra safeguards when people want to do research on prisoners. And I think that carries over in some sense here, thinking about their clinical decisions, that we want to make sure that they aren't taken advantage of. But I think there are many things we could do to make sure that they still get to exercise their free choice and they're not taken advantage of. One example is to appoint independent donor advocates, someone who's objective, who's not part of the prison administration, who oversees the donation process, makes sure that the form is filled out correctly, makes sure that the prisoner can have any questions answered, make sure that they understand that they're not going to be released early because of this. Although we could have a really good conversation about whether they ought to, because I'm not convinced 100% that they shouldn't be. But they could have this advocate who's maybe outside of the prison system to help them understand the decision they're making. And then they look very much like someone on the outside. And a prisoner's reasons or decision to donate may have predated the crime or the conviction, and they may just be carrying that forward. I think there's a certain irony here about treating vulnerable populations based on historical exploitation as not having a choice, saying that because we're worried that someone might be taking advantage of you and that you can't make a freely autonomous choice, the response to that is we're going to take that choice away from you. And I think that's just an incredible irony here in the sort of ethics culture of wanting to protect autonomy by taking away autonomy through this kind of paternalistic, we know what's best for you framework. So I guess that's my concern, is that the history has been so tainted in the way prisoners have been treated over the past 200 years that I do think that that might be influencing the way we think about their decisions here. But I think there are many things we could do to make sure that they're still making an informed choice.
Why do you think that reward, signing up as an organ donation and getting something for it, may be a good idea, or at least an idea to explore?
Yeah, I think there's so many pros to increasing the organ donation the pool of organs. There are cons, as we've discussed, but I think that we want to be pretty careful and thoughtful before we just dismiss all of these options for more organs out of hand because they rub us the wrong way. There's something about organs that seems very creepy about the history in Edinburgh, where medical researchers were killing people and were participating in organized crime to get bodies for medical research. And this history exists, and there are exceedingly rare cases today where people have taken advantage of vulnerable people to get their organs, but that's exceedingly rare, but that still informs what we're thinking about this whole process. And so I think we're worried about people making this decision not without thinking through all of the risks and maybe overemphasizing the benefits. But I don't know that it's necessarily a problem to incentivize people to donate organs. And there are a whole range of things we could do, both in the prison population and out. We could do things like, if you donate a kidney, this would be a living donor as opposed to after you die. Then if one of your loved ones needs a kidney, they get bumped up on the list. That's called a pay it forward plan. That's what's done in places like Israel. You could have tax benefits for people who donate organs, who agree to donate organs posthumously or actually donate a piece of their liver or their lung or their kidney when they're alive. And so I'm not sure that we want to strip all of those benefits to prisoners. They get benefits already from decisions that they make, so-called secondary gain. If they serve as an informant against one of their co-defendants and they point the finger at them, that presents some risks to their safety, but it also provides a benefit that their sentence is often reduced and they can plead to something less. There are a lot of things that we would allow prisoners to do if they go to church, if they work in the library, if they have exhibited good behavior, then we will reduce their sentence. And I'm not sure we should automatically take off the table a reduction in sentence because they decide to donate their organs. It is a very pro-social thing. It's a very generous and compassionate thing. So I wouldn't automatically take it off the table, but I'd like to hear more from the prisoners as to why they'd like to donate.
Well, we don't have any prisoners here, but Jim Tabery, I mean, is this a slippery slope that you were describing earlier, giving people incentives to become organ donors? Does that lead to creating a black market or additional pressures on people to sign up as organ donors, as you see it?
Yeah, it's certainly one of the slippery slopes that people point to. I think what I liked about what Professor Brown was doing, though, was she wasn't just focusing on how can we incentivize prisoners. It was, should we be thinking about incentivization more broadly across culture? Because, you know, the number of organs we're going to get with this policy of targeting particularly the prisoner population is in the end going to be relatively small, right? And so thinking about this on a broader scale allows you to think about, you know, are there things that we could be doing more generally that also allow us to get more organs from prisoners? I think the main concern would be, you don't, because organ donation is voluntary, you don't want to do anything that in some sense compromises the community buy-in into this process. And so if people felt like as a result of things that were being done in prisons, there was something seedy going on with organ donation, the danger would be then people actually are less inclined to donate and you end up with a net loss in terms of the organs that are gain from this entire process. And so I think the idea of thinking about it more generally is fantastic.
Maybe this discussion is too much because so many inmates, Steve Gerke, as you mentioned, are not going to be eligible organ donors just because of the health risks they have or risky behaviors that they've contracted HIV or whatever. I mean, can you illuminate us on the medical practice, the screening process that the prison is currently undergoing when it comes to organ donation?
Sure. So we actually don't make those calls personally. Our clinical staff is capable of doing a lot of things, but by the time someone's reached the end of their life, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be at the University of Utah Medical Center when they're actually on death's bed or getting ready to pass away. So they have medical professionals up there who deal with this on a regular basis anyway. They're diagnosing just typical individuals like you or I in the community who come up there and are ready to pass away, basically. So it's the same processes that go into place for you or I, basically, for inmates who are up there. The medical professionals are able to assess people and try to determine if they're too risky of a pool or if they're an ideal population for a potential organ donation. So if you don't mind, one point that I want to make, too, on the live organ donations and the reason that Utah hasn't gone down that road at this point is one of the considerations there, too, is if you're in custody, generally the taxpayer is the one who's footing the bill for your medical care, right? So if you're someone who's in custody, you've donated a kidney, for example, then the Utah taxpayer is then going to be much more accountable for keeping you alive by treating that one remaining kidney if you get some sort of kidney failure or some issue that comes into play. So it could increase long-term expenses for healthcare if we're allowing an inmate or enabling an inmate to go ahead and donate while they're still living a healthy lifestyle in population. So that's one consideration too that we've taken into account. Not that that law couldn't be changed, but again, that's the reason that we don't really go down that road at this time, and we're focusing on inmates who are deceased mm-hmm. for this population.
Did you have something to add?
Well, I think it's great that, and I understand why the correctional world would be thinking about the cost to the taxpayer from the correctional facility, but it's a little short-sighted to focus just on the costs to the taxpayer from donors within the population, because the government through the taxpayer pays for end-stage renal failure and pays for a lot of dialysis on people on Medicare and Medicaid. So often the taxpayers are paying for that anyway. It could be 20 years of dialysis, which might end up being quite a bit more expensive than paying for the donor in the prison population.
Mm. We're speaking about inmates and that population as a population targeted for organ donations. It's the subject of a proposed law that lawmakers are considering. In studio with us, Tennille Brown, Associate Professor of Law at the University of Utah. Also, Jim Tabery, Assistant Professor of Philosophy at the University of Utah. And Steve Gerke, Spokesman for the Utah Department of Corrections. And you are welcome to join us if you've got questions or comments about this proposed law that invites inmates to become organ donors. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. This is a slightly different question, but if prisoners are eligible to donate organs, should they also be eligible to be on the receiving end if they need an organ donation? Professor Tabery, what are the ethics surrounding that issue?
It's very controversial, and I think it's interesting that we're having this conversation about organ donation from prisoners, because the long-running debate has always been, should they have access to organs in the first place? And here's the argument for not taking prison, whether or not you're a prisoner, into consideration. It's a scarce resource, and the thought is that we want to, you know, the challenge is, how do we distribute a scarce resource fairly, and what inclusion or exclusion criteria should we be taking into consideration when we do something like this? For a variety of reasons, being a prisoner is often left off that list in terms of what would exclude you. I think you could certainly, I mean, this kind of, you know, this is an extension of Professor Brown's earlier argument. You can make a case for why it should exclude you, but there's lots of controversial inclusion-exclusion criteria. So age is one. Our former Vice President Cheney just recently got a heart transplant, and that raised all sorts of questions about, should people that far along in their life get it when we could give it to somebody younger? And the argument against including something like age or including something like prisoner status is because when you want to try to judge that, you get into the business of trying to judge somebody's social worth, and that's a really tricky thing to do. I mean, it's easier for doctors to evaluate, this is how much this person's chance of survival is on this organ versus this person's chance of survival. That's a bit more objective. But when you try to get into the business of saying, this person is worth more to society, this person's worth less to society, you find groups that have done this in the past often bring in certain biases that kind of favor people like them and disfavor people that don't look or act or think like them. And so keeping prisoner status out of that is a way to avoid trying to get in the business of evaluating people's social worth.
Hmm. Steve Gerke, has the Utah Department of Corrections okayed an inmate for a transplant? Has this come up in the history of the prison system?
Sure, it happens. Once an inmate's in need of some sort of medical operation or medical treatment of some sort, if it's something that we can't provide on site at the infirmary at the Utah State Prison, then they basically just go through the same process as I was explaining that everyone else in the community would go to. So they get treatment at the university. The doctors there would be the ones who would do transplant type situations. So I don't have a whole lot of insight on, you know, how they're put on that waiting list, whether the fact that they're an inmate comes into play. But no, generally the processes are the same for someone in the community.
Mm. Tennille Brown.
Yeah, so you have pretty specific listing criteria. You have the Organ Procurement Transplant Network. This is something that's overseen by the Health and Human Services, the federal government. And then UNOS is the private, nonprofit contracting group that oversees the listing of organ donors. And there are certain requirements, like you don't get bumped up in the list because you're a celebrity, and that used to be rumors of that sort of thing happening. But it's supposed to not happen that you get bumped up for being a celebrity or some special person. But they also provide guidelines that then hospitals are free to develop policies around for when someone could be listed as an appropriate organ recipient. And these criteria include things like, does the person use drugs? Do they smoke? Do they have a stable family environment that would help them comply with what is often a very complicated regimen of medicine? That's often the pivotal factor where you can introduce these biases, as Dr. Tabery was mentioning, because you could say that someone who you don't think of is maybe going to be living as long, or maybe you make this implicit call as to what the value of their life is. You can often do that through the back door of what their social environment is. So foster kids, should they be allowed to get organs because their environment may be a little more unstable, or people who are mentally ill, or people who are homeless, or people who are undocumented citizens.
On down the line.
Exactly. And prisoners are part of that population, where there might be some questions about whether they could comply with the very rigorous medical regimen that you need to comply with in order to keep that organ safe. People get proprietary over these organs when they're involved in the transplantation process. And when someone gets an organ, they want to make sure that it thrives in that body. So they want to make sure that they're taking all the medicines, that they're not smoking. And I think you could actually make an argument that in the prison population, because their day-to-day routine is so controlled, it might be easier to make sure that they comply with this post-donation regimen than someone who's out there who's not in the prison population.
I'm not sure who could answer this question, but how much information are transplant recipients given about their donors? I mean, are people, if you inject a lot of prisoner organs out there, are people going to be thinking, okay, is my liver coming from a murderer? You know what I mean?
I mean, well,
Professor Tabry.
I would think if the choice is between dying or getting a liver from a prisoner, you're going to take the liver from the prisoner. Now, it is kept confidential, but look, we're not talking about young Frankenstein and you know, getting the abnormal brain here. There's no reason to think that you're going to get some kind of tainted blood or gene or something with a kidney or a liver from a prisoner.
Anyone else want to jump in? Is that just a weird question, or is that?
No, I think it's not a weird question at all. I mean, I think some people, and you ask people who've received organs, they would even argue, and I'm not sure if there's any scientific basis for this, but they argue that there's some kind of muscle memory, that they actually share some memories with someone who donated the organ. And it sounds like it's science fiction, but there are a couple of anecdotal cases where people actually think they have a bond with their organ donor. I think that there are more modern practices at places like Cal Pacific in San Francisco, where they actually create donor rings, where you donate an organ and you may not be receiving an organ, but maybe someone you know is, and there may be 10 people in this donation ring where they're all between them donating and receiving the organs. And sometimes then they know who those recipients are and they know who the donors are, and they stay in touch. And sometimes these are life-changing relationships where they feel so indebted to the person who's donated, and the person who donated feels so blessed to have been given the chance to save someone's life. So it's not always anonymous, but it often is.
If I could jump in quick,
yes,
just on that, same topic. I mean, there's this kind of a stigma that's attached to prisoners in general. And just, we talk about the abnormal brain and, you know, are they going to get all the negative implications that come with being a prisoner and being a bad person? And obviously our entire population of 6,800 some odd inmates in Utah is not just all bad to the core type people. You know,
that's
a lot of these
point.
People are who, you know, they made one mistake in life that really brought them down that path. And it's unfortunate. Some of it's, you know, a big percentage of our population is due to addictions to substance abuses and things like that. So there's a lot of people in there who actually want to spend their time in prison by repaying a debt to society actively, not just sitting in a cell, not just kind of waiting for their date to come. But this kind of falls into line with some of the other projects they do. You know, they do a lot of volunteer services, and they do a lot of, you know, crocheting and different things like that. You don't expect to walk into a cell and see a male inmate sitting there crocheting, you know, a knit cap for kids and things. But that stuff does happen, and this kind of falls into line with that kind of mentality, where there's a certain population of the prison that actually wants to do something beneficial for society. So I just kind of wanted to point that out as well.
The law that's being considered or being drafted by Representative Elias, and it does not include death row inmates. Is that right?
That's my understanding.
Well, it doesn't exclude death row inmates.
Yeah, the public relations sort of press around this says that it wouldn't include, but the actual bill says nothing about whether it would be based on execution or natural death. I think the intent was for it to only include people who died naturally. But it doesn't say that in the bill.
In the Salt Lake Trib article that I read from October 17th, it was suggestive that people associated with the bill would like to open it up to death row inmates.
Okay. Well, our time is short, but finally, a question for each of you. What advice or questions would you give to lawmakers as they're considering this proposal? Is there anything that they should be thinking about? Professor Tabry.
I would say we should be thinking about how do we increase the population of organ donors more generally. I mean, I think this is a useful bill in that it's trying to do that. But it, in terms of the, you know, the gross number of organs that we're going to increase from this, it's pretty small. You know, I would say a conversation like this, you know, on a Tuesday morning can do a whole lot more to bring the issue of organ donation up more generally. You know, I encourage your listeners to be organ donors and thinking about it more generally. If that's the real goal, to increase the number, you know, we should be thinking about how to do that. And also thinking about making sure that we don't, you know, do things that would compromise people from participating, and implementing a program that might have some seediness associated with it, like getting organs from death row inmates, I would say could do more harm than good.
Hmm. Professor Brown, just very quickly.
So I think one major thing that lawmakers need to consider is the lack of surrogates or family members when these prisoners are ending up at the University of Utah. This is a common problem. They're called, it's a terrible term, but friendless. And so you fill out a form when you're first brought into the prison, but often the decision is made at the bedside, and there needs to be some provision in place for maybe an independent panel to serve as the surrogate when that prisoner doesn't have any family members present to speak for him or her.
Hmm. Tennille Brown, she is Associate Professor of Law at the University of Utah. Tennille, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Jim Tabery, Assistant Professor of Philosophy, also at the University of Utah. Jim, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And Steve Gerke, Spokesman for the Utah Department of Corrections. Steve, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.
Coming up next, environmentalism, Mormon style. But first a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.